Hello, Sophia here. I'm wondering if you've ever been curious about what it's like to work with a fashion stylist, or what a sex club is like for someone in a fat body, or what are the weight neutral approaches to PCOS treatment, or what I thought about the Aubrey Gordon Your Fat Friend film. Well, over on the Fat Joy newsletter, I am sharing these personal stories and practical strategies for living in our diet culture world. When you subscribe for free, you'll get an email from me about twice per month. I'm also recording video conversations with incredible fat people as well as amazing fat allies. And I want to share these people with you. So if you want some more Fat Joy, please go to fatjoy.substack.com. That is Fatjoy, FATJOY dot Substack, SUBSTACK.com. And subscribe to get all of this Fat Joy goodness in your inbox. Okay. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
Hello, lovelies. Welcome to the Fat Joy podcast, where we talk each week about how to flourish in an anti-fat world. I'm Sophia Apostle, a fat professional coach who loves talking to other fat people about what it's like to live within oppressive systems that marginalize our bodies and how we still dare to have the audacity and courage to reach towards our collective liberation and embrace our joy. Please know this is an adult content podcast, so there will be swears. We will be talking about harms we've experienced, and we will be rebelling against weight stigma, diet culture, fat phobia, ableism, racism, etc. You can get more Fat Joy goodness, including how you can support the podcast, through my newsletter at fatjoy.substack.com. And for episode transcripts, book reviews, and show notes, head to the Fat Joy website at fatjoy.life. I am so glad you're here. Enjoy this episode. Hello, lovelies. Welcome back to the Fat Joy podcast. I'm Sophia Apostle, and I'm very excited to be talking to my guest today. So with me is Jessie Diaz Herrera. And Jessie, we were introduced by a mutual friend who is just delightful. And I was talking with her and she's like, you need to interview Jessie. And she connected us and here we are. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Yay,
and we love Amanda on the podcast.
Oh, yes. Amanda's the best. Amanda and I do like every couple months, we have like a little Zoom coffee date and I'm like, tell me what you're doing. And she's like, tell me what you're doing. And we just like have this fat love fest. It's so good.
Good. Yeah. It's like online. It's like virtual colleagues in many ways because we all do so much similar work. And there's not really like an office or like a, you know, we all have these like little online communities, but I love when we can bring it to Zoom and say like, hey, let's chat. And like, let's really bounce ideas off each other and support each other. So beautiful.
Absolutely. Yeah. Fat community. I didn't realize what I was missing until I started to build it for myself. And I was like, oh, this has been missing. Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. And you're excellent at building fat community. So I'm very excited to talk to you about that. But before, why don't you tell us who you are? Who are you, Jessie? What are you?
Yeah. This is random person on this podcast today. No. Hi, y'all. I'm Jessie. I label myself as a plus size certified fitness instructor. People are like, what does that mean? It just means that I represent someone in a plus size body as a certified fitness instructor. I have the credentials. So what I'm going to talk about today, I know what I'm talking about. But also, I've been a dancer my whole life. I actually came into fitness through dance, sports, and actually dance has been my entire life. I was always active in my body. I was always in a bigger body and always active. So the two were never opposites of each other for me. I was always in movement in a bigger body. So that's really a lot what we'll talk about today, but a lot of my passion is just moving and having confidence and really gaining body confidence through movement. So that's my journey. And I've done a million things to get there. But overall, I feel like that is my label for myself and that I love.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's beautifully, beautifully explained, Jesse. And currently you run, own, founded, I think all of those things. Power Plus Wellness.
Teach.
Yeah. Power Plus Wellness, which is in New York. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So I co-founded Power Plus Wellness with my good friend, Maddie Jones. Shout out to Maddie Jones. She's actually been in the plus size fashion industry and model industry for decades and just a legend, an icon in the space. And when we teamed up, really, it was she knew all about the community, all about working with the plus size community. And I knew all about the movements and how we can bring that together. And so it was just our first class was February of 2020. That gives you any context. And we were like, let's do this. And we were actually this place that no longer exists now. Man, I really feel like we talk about, this is a side note, but I feel like nowadays we talk about before pandemic, after pandemic, like how BC and AD, literally like how I talk about things now. So before pandemic, we had one class and it was actually so cool. It was an underwater cycling class. It was super cool. And it was, it's one of those things where it was something so unusual and also intriguing. Right. And so I ended up a bigger body, kind of felt like, oh, I'm in the water. So there's less tension. You know, we really, it's just, it's also great to be in the water. It's hard for us New Yorkers to actually be in a pool a lot of the times too. So we sold out immediately, which was so beautiful. And then, you know, we were like, this is so great. And then we had to shut down. But we started back up in 2021 and we did one aqua cycling class and one aerial yoga class. And then I was teaching my Frida Jiggle classes, which we'll talk about, but it's a dance follow along class. So we had three classes we were doing a month for the first year, really, because that's all we could. We were just starting this up. And, but the demand, and like you said, the demand for community, especially after the pandemic, like everyone was just like craving community. People were alone for a lot of the time. And a lot of bodies have changed too in the pandemic. Like we don't talk, you know, people talk about it, but like they use it in a way that's like a depressive way. Like, oh, my body got bigger, or not like my body was keeping me alive, or like trying to survive this bonds a replay. But it really, you know, for me, it was a way of like, let's reclaim movement in a way that feels safe and feels good. And the demand just kept growing. And so now here we are in, you know, our January just passed and we had almost 20 classes this month. And so, yeah, it's really grown and we're just so excited to see what's to come.
Oh, I love it, Jesse. Thank you for sharing what you've created. And your Instagram, if you're not following Jesse on Instagram, please do. It is so much fun. I was watching a clip this morning of you on a TV show and you took like the two news anchors, like through a little bit of Free the Jiggle. I was like, this is amazing. So much fun.
You know, so like Free the Jiggle, like everyone loves that, the phrase, but it's truly a fun phrase to say because it's, I feel like one, it's radical, right? Like, let's free the things that we're so afraid of hiding. Like, you know, I know our moms in that generation would call, you know, the bat wing, or like, you know, when you wave, like you want to make sure this is not flabbing, and all of those things that like we were told as kids and even in our adult life, that was wrong. And we purposely jiggle those in our class. We are like, we're going to jiggle our arms. We're going to do all these things in spite of, but also because it actually, and again, this is where I put my fitness hat on, but jiggling, filling our bodies wakes up our lymphatic system, right? It actually is increasing blood flow and oxygen in our bodies. When you're nervous, when you're feeling like a bit anxious, you can literally shake your body for 30 to 45 seconds. And I promise you, like, there's a relief that comes to your body. Like, we really have the power to like heal ourselves if we can tap in. And so that's really like, you know, there's, so it's both, and like we talk about both the rage and the joy, right? There's like the, there's this radical, I'm going to shake everyone. No, F you, right? Versus like, and also because, man, this feels so good.
Yeah, I love it. I love the both and so much. Well, and Jesse, you've touched on something. You've already mentioned kind of, you know, messages that we were given when we were kids. I forgot about the term bat wing. Oh my God. Thank you for putting that back in my consciousness.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's all right. The one that I always remember is thunder thighs. Like, I remember, you know, my family using that term. So what has been your own journey with this word fat? Like, how did it show up when you were a kid? How do you work with it now? Like, what's your journey been like?
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting, actually, when I was a kid, I want to say before 10, before puberty, really, me and my sister were the opposite. She was the little chubby one, and I wasn't skinny, but I just wasn't the chubby one. I was just a normal kid, and but you know, she had the little pot belly. And I feel like as kids, especially in the Latino community, it's so cute. They think it's so cute. They're like, oh my God. We actually have little names. We called her Gordibiri, which means like little chubby one, but it was out of love. It was a term of endearment. So, and we also had like tia, we would call like tia gorda, like literally like fat aunt, but it was not, like that was her name. Like everyone called her that. And it was a term of endearment. Oh my God, I even remember there was a, now that I say that, I think there was a woman, there was a substitute teacher that we called Miss Chubby.
Oh.
Which is also so interesting to me. But anyway, so I grew up seeing it that it wasn't term of endearment up until you're not a kid anymore. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, it's so cute. Oh my goodness. Like, da 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 da. And it's like, either you have to be really old or like really young for it to be cute. That's what I realized. And so, you know, saying in Spanish, oh, tu ta gorda, you're like, you're fat now. Like, that didn't mean a term of endearment as you got older, right? So that was really interesting. And to me, you know, I always identified as someone who, in every stage, I feel like we've gone through so many terms in this industry. But in every term, I've said I was curvy. I've said I was plus size. I've said I was thick, voluptuous, whatever the phrases were. I was like, I identify with that. So, but I think that was the hardest one to, because I feel like that's the newest right term to take back. And I love the idea of like reclaiming words, right? I feel like there's a lot of communities that do that in certain ways, right? And how like words that were really derogatory are now used within their own communities as a terms of endearment. And so it's interesting because I call myself fat. I identify as a fat person, but I also don't feel comfortable with straight size people calling me fat still. So like that's where I think I'm grappling with. And it's, again, it is trauma, right? It's like, and I also, it's like, where are you coming from? I need to know what your intention is when you're calling me fat. Because I know what my intention is. So I feel like that's where I'm at. I'm accepting for myself and I identify that with myself, but I also feel like it's a very, and I don't mean to, and this could be controversial, but right now I feel like it's a word that feels good within our own community. I'm not so sure how I feel about other people using it yet. Doesn't mean that it just, that's how I feel right now.
Yeah. Well, and I totally agree with like the intentionality behind how a non-fat person is using that word. That really matters. That changes it completely. Yeah.
Intention. Yeah, totally.
So Jesse, the gorda is the Spanish word for fat. Is that, I think that's what you were saying, gorda. Is that a word that is being reclaimed? Or is that still like kind of like how you've like, what's the difference between in the language, between the languages?
That's a good question. Like, again, I think it's all how you use it and, you know, the things that you add behind it, right? Like we would say gordibiri, which is like a cute little thing, like, oh, she's a cute little chubby thing. And, you know, it's, It's how you use it, right? And some people can say, like, yes, I think in the community, we certainly use it, but we as a you know, Latina community really still hones a lot on being, you can't be too skinny and you can't be too fat. Because it's really on both sides of the spectrum for us. Like, if you lose too much weight, you're like, oh, you're too skinny. You need to be eating. Like, you don't look good, or like, you look malnourished. And then it's on the other side. Oh no, you like gain too much weight. Like, if you want to keep your husband, you want your husband not in these streets. Like, and it's like that generation really says stuff like that. And you're like, wow. Okay. You know, it's funny. I surround myself with so many fat people all the time. And my community, I just made this beautiful community that, like, when I'm out of it, I'm like, whoa, this is still happening.
Totally. That's how I feel too. Whenever I, like, enter into the, you know, IRL, I'm like, oh, everyone's not liberated yet. Like, come on, people. Like, it feels almost like aggressive. I've had a few things recently where I've had to, like, be in the physio office and, you know, some white dude was saying stuff and I'm like, okay, like, enough. And I just call it now. I'm actually getting, I'm getting really obnoxious.
Good. Well, because, you know, what I'm about to say is, like, why do I have to sit with your, why do I have to sit with you making me uncomfortable? I could make you uncomfortable too. Like, I'm not, like, if you're saying these things, like, you're making me uncomfortable, why can't I then say things that challenge you and makes you a little uncomfortable? And it's not the tit for tat, but it's also like, I'm allowing myself to sit with this uncomfortability and I'm not speaking up for myself in many ways, right? I'm allowing myself to hear it and it's entering my brain and it's making me upset. So it is affecting me, right? And so, like, those are the things I think about when I try to enter these spaces of, like, okay, you're going to advocate for yourself with love, you know, because some of these people are your family that you do love. And, you know, you just have to, like, really come from a place of compassion, I will say, because a lot of people, what I've understood especially is that we've grown up more with diet culture than we have with body positivity and body confidence. And so there's a lot of unlearning that has to get done and you have to be willing to unlearn it.
Yeah. Well, and when we think about what's passed down generation to generation, I think you said you have a daughter. Is that right? Yeah. So I'm curious, what are you doing differently as a parent that's different from what you received? Like, are you really, I imagine you're quite conscious about that in how you, yeah.
I would say, so for me, it's being an active mom. When I mean that, I mean, literally, like, we go to the trampoline park and we are jumping and I'm sometimes the only mom that's jumping, you know, and also not afraid to be in a bigger body, jumping on a trampoline, right? I think it's one of those things that I'm not being afraid to jump in the pool with her, be in a bikini in front of her. So many times I see my mom in a shirt in the pool and she's not even, she was never plus size, but she was, you know, she just, again, she would call herself, she had thunder thighs. She would say that. And so for herself, she was always covering herself in many ways. So I grew up seeing, you know, my mom and other people around me not really flaunting themselves or in a way that, like, they were always talking about their bodies in negative light, basically. And so for me, it was just like, how can I make sure, one, that I am confident in my body, that I don't ever say anything negative about my body around her? Because also, like, yes, we're going to have times where we don't feel well and hormones and things. And listen, we have those days. But being able to know how to represent yourself in front of your daughter or just in front of your kids in general. Because yeah, those things we like, subconsciously those kids are hearing that and can take that all in. What's wrong with me? You know, my kid is, she's on the spectrum. And so for me, a lot of it is just building confidence in her socially, but also, conscious of who she is. Like, you know, you're great. Your brain is great. Your body is great. Your personality is great. And I think it's really, like, making sure that I acknowledge all of those things. Because I think so too. We always say to girls, you're so pretty. You're so pretty. And it's like, that's all that they, you're so pretty. And it's like, you're actually really smart. You're so funny. I think you're so funny. You're a funny, really funny kid. I love your hair. You know, I like, I tell her things all the time that she feels good. And, you know, I'm a big proponent of affirmations. We do affirmations every morning, every night. Sometimes she'll be like, oh, I'm loving, I'm smart, I'm beautiful, I'm blah. Like, sometimes she'll be so upset, like, lying, I'm smart, I'm loving. but really, it's like, it's ingrained into her head now. She knows that, like, these are things you say every morning and every night to affirm to yourself, you know? But you're good.
I love that practice. I think I'm so glad. Like, that's like the good kind of brainwashing. Like, get that in there so deep. And I can just imagine the eye roll. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Literally, the more she's like, I'm strong, I'm loving, I'm smart, I'm beautiful, I'm blessed, I can do my mind too. Like, that is the, that's the monotone. And I'm like, no, come on, girl. You're strong. You're loving. You're kind. You're beautiful. You're blessed. You can do anything you put your mind to. And she's looking at me like, you are doing the most.
Oh my God. I just feel like if we can't embarrass our children, what's the point of having them?
Literally. Oh, I, no shame here. I am definitely the embarrassing mom for sure.
Oh my God. So fun. So, Jesse, I'm really curious about your journey to dance and what dance did for you and then how you parlayed that into this thriving business. So let's start with, like, when did you start dancing? How did you, like what's that? What's, how did you do that? What was that journey?
Yeah, absolutely. So I started dancing when I was a kid, ballet, tap, and jazz. I was like in a dance company that I grew up in, you know, from 5 to 12 years old. So like really all of my childhood, you know, I loved those teachers. I looked up to those teachers. I was there all day, Saturday morning to the afternoon and like two weeknights. It was like, that was my life as a kid. And for me, it was really, again, how do I say this? Like, for me, I have ADHD, in case you haven't realized, with all my thoughts going around the world. But it was a way that, like, when I danced, my brain was focused. I wasn't thinking about left, right. I was able to really just zoom in, like, and just say, I'm here, I'm present. And as a kid, I didn't realize what was happening, but I knew that when I was in dance, I felt, I was like, man, I can pick this up so well, but like, I can't sit still in class. Like, I remember thinking those things like that. So for me, it was in many ways therapeutic. And it wasn't until I hit puberty, around 10 years old, that my body was really changing. And we had to start going into the teenage program, right? When you're 12 years old, you have to audition in this space. I don't know how it works now, but in the 90s, you were in the children's program in ballet, and then you had to audition for like the teenage program. And they had this, like, people who came from the Academy of Ballet, like, it was very serious. Like, you practiced for like weeks, and it was like an honor, because not everyone gets into the teenage program. So it was also a way of being like, man, I really want to do this and I really want to make it. At the time where I was living in Brooklyn, it was very mixed, which I loved. It was like Black, brown, white ballerinas all together. But most of the teenagers that made it were like thin white, like, ballerinas, you know? And so a lot of, and it was maybe like 2 or 3 people of color in the teenage program. So a lot of us were like, we knew subconsciously that only a couple of us would make it, which, you know, is sad. But again, at the time, this is, at 12 years old, you're not even thinking about race in that way. You're just thinking about like, man, okay, like, I think I can make it, but like, I have 7 other people that I have to compete with. So I remember practicing, and I did really well. I felt so confident. This plays in. But I was so confident. And after the audition, one of like the head director came up to me and was like, you did so well. We really think that you have potential to be in the program, but, you know, we want you to lose a little bit of weight. At 12 years old. And again, this is not an anomaly. Like, when I say this, I've heard so many stories that were like this, which is so devastating. But, you know, so this might resonate with someone today, but this story is not unique to me because this has happened so much in the dance industry, especially to kids, which is so, so horrible. But it's just a mom that I think about this. I'm like, ah! But, you know, and I'm saying this now because there might be moms listening, but as a kid back then, I idolized my teacher so much that I was like, she wants the best for me and that what she's saying is right. Right? And I look up to her and she's looking out for me and she wants me to be in the program and she's pulled me aside, which means that I feel special. That's what I was thinking in my head. Okay. Not that like she was shaming me. So these are the things as a 12-year-old, my mindset was. And what did I do as a 12-year-old? Like, what is dieting as a 12-year-old? We didn't have the internet that was, you know, it wasn't as expansive as it is now and we didn't have resources. And so I was just skipping meals. I would tell my mom, my stomach hurts to the point where I had eventually fainted. And it was like, it's maybe 3 or 4 days after. And my mom, you know, she's like, what's wrong with you? You don't have a fever. You're not coughing. Like, you know, like, tell me what's wrong. And it was funny because even though I knew that my teacher, what I thought my teacher was looking out for me, I still didn't tell my mom. So it, you know what I mean? In a way, like I knew it was wrong. They didn't tell my mother, but I hid that under the guise of they want the best for me. So when I told my mom that, she was furious, right? And my mom, anyone understands, like Rosie Perez, she's like a very New Yorkian mom, like born in the Bronx, and like she doesn't, nobody messes with her daughters. Like nobody messes with her daughters. Like she is that kind of woman. Like you do not mess with her girls. Okay. She storms into that office and curses everybody out. She's like, nobody tells my fucking daughter what to eat, what to look like. And it's because my mom spent so much money into this program for years with me, my sister, my mom took classes herself. So she's like, we put so much time and effort into this freaking place. You know what I mean? And for this to, you know, happen. So needless to say, she pulls all out the program, which I was devastated at the time. I was like, my mom ruined my life. I was so mad at her. I was like, you embarrassed me. And I mean, we talk about this now, and she was literally sticking up for me at a time where I didn't know that I was being shamed or bullied. And I thank her every day for it. But at the time, I was so traumatized and I was just like, you took dance away from me. And that's when I started to have negative thoughts of my body, when I was like, oh, so my body is not good enough for dance anymore. Or like now it's like, it's a topic of conversation. And that's really started to really open my eyes to becoming conscious of what I look like. And that created this like negative thought, a negative idea of who I was in that time. And so it was really tough during that time to really understand, especially as a teenager, like your body's constantly changing and then you're not in a space where you're not in community anymore, right? You're not in dance community anymore. And so you're like seeking attention and seeking things and doing all this stuff. So I actually dedicated my life to sports after that. And I said, I need to still be moving and I need to find community. And when I went to high school, I did sports. And in college, I was in softball for 15 years. And I went to audition for the softball team at my college. That same night, one of my friends was like, there's a dance group that is like auditioning. You should do that because I've seen you dance. I'm like, you should really join like audition. So that morning I did a softball audition, softball tryout. And that night I did a dance audition. And needless to say, I was like, oh, I like this community better.
Amazing.
And I got back into dance. So, I through community, and it was also just the most diverse group on campus, the most body diverse group on campus, racially, and I went to school in Massachusetts. So like, it's just, you know, it's not a lot of diversity in the district to begin with. So you know, for me, it was just like a really great microcosm, but that really led to continuing the focus in dance and performance, but still also entwining sports. I was playing rugby while I was dancing. I just, again, my body always craved movement, which is why I always say, like, to say bigger people are not active or to say that active doesn't come in different bodies is so ridiculous to me to hear, because I've literally been in movement my entire life and always been in a bigger body. So, you know, I have this really love-hate relationship with dance. That's really in a way that was like, I loved it, then I was shamed for it, and then I found it again. And that's kind of like how I structure my classes, right? Like, I want it to be a safe space because there's so many places that are not safe for us or that don't feel safe. And how do I make, from those experiences that I've had, that I know that's not a unique experience that a lot of us have had, how do I say this is a safe space? And by saying that, by starting the class, saying, hey, this is a safe space for you to jiggle, for you to mess up, for you to laugh, for you to stop whenever you want, you know, for you to modify, this is that space for you to do that. If you need a water break, go. If you need to stop dancing, cheer for someone else. You know, like, it's, there's ways that I'm always giving people the opportunity to do what they need, right? Because a lot of times we're always following the leader, following, I must do it right, and I must do it like this, and if I don't do it like this, I'm a failure. When it's like, why, you know, as instructors, we are facilitators in many ways, right? My body, I said, it's like, you know, you and I have different body types, right? And let's say, like, in art, you're a different paintbrush than I am, and our brush strokes are going to be different, but we're still creating art, right? We're still creating something. And I think that's the beauty of it, is like, we have to see that my brush stroke is not going to be your brush stroke. My dance move is not going to look like you. But if you're feeling the sensation of feeling good, that's the goal. That's the goal.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that is so beautiful. And I love that we ended on this feeling of, after going through all, almost like love lost and found with dance.
Yes. I know. I'm so, such a long story, but yeah.
No, I think it's so good. This is why I always ask, I love learning how, like, where did our internalized anti-fatness start? And it's so clear in your story, the circumstances that happened, and then the whole, like, what that kicked off, the ripple effects of that.
Yeah. And but how it has fueled me, you know, like, I feel like little me would look at me now and be like crying in joy that we now have beginner ballet classes for fat people. Like, I go to my class every time and I start tearing up because it hits an emotional chord for me. And that actually was one of our first viral videos that happened on Power Plus Wellness. And again, that's why I say that my story is not unique, because I started to see all the same stories. And whether it's from instructors or their own mothers that would say, you're too chubby to be a ballerina, you know? Like, I saw that so many times in our comments. And it's just like, it broke me. It broke the little girl in me that she was like, oh, like, we all felt this. We all felt this. So we're truly like healing our inner child in many ways, and reclaiming that. Cause, you know, we do movement classes, like we do our traditional fitness classes, but we also doing our dance classes, our movement classes that, feel good. And I urge people to tell, you know, anyone listening to that, movement doesn't have to be at the gym. Movement could be, you know, a walk, movement could be swimming, movement could be taking a hike, movement could be a dance class, could be a ballet class. You know, there's so many different ways that you can use movement for joy and for intention that feels good. Does it feel like a punishment? Or does it feel like I must go to the gym and do this? You know?
Well, and that's what I love about what you said at the end as well, where you create a space where people get to return to trusting what their body is telling them. Because I feel like that's the first thing when your teacher said to you, hey, you need to lose a little bit of weight, like, your trust in your own body just got stripped away immediately. It's gone for years, for decades, you know? And so I work out with a really wonderful studio called Body Positive Fitness, and it's all virtual. I just do it. I literally do it in my office. They're amazing.
I've substituted for them before during the pandemic, actually, for Simone. shout out to Simone.
Right? Yeah. And like they, it's this, and for the first time, really, I'm like, what does my body want? Because I'm also a very good student and I'm very competitive. So I'm like, I will do exactly what.
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
Even if my body doesn't want to move that way, like I have absolutely injured myself in the past trying to do things that my body was like, oh, I don't think that's for you in this moment, maybe tomorrow, but not today. And so this whole, right, like returning to listening to my body, attuning to what it wants, trusting it, that took years for me to be able, because I was an athlete growing up as well. Like I really resonate with your story, Jessica. I'm like, oh, yeah, I have very similar experiences. And so to actually make my body the authority is huge when it comes to movement. And I'm so, like, now I can engage with movement in a way that feels, that does feel joyful, that does feel, like, nourishing to my well-being, as opposed to before it always felt like there was this subtext of it needed to accomplish something else, like intentional weight loss, or I had to hit these swimming goals or whatever. And now I'm just like, hey, I just get to come and have some fun. And also, whenever I do Zumba class, for me, the edge is Zumba, because how do people move their body so fast? My body does not move that fast. But I love these classes because I love the music and I kind of do it halftime. And I'm like, I don't make myself wrong for that anymore. And that's the revolution. I think like that's the piece, is where we get to work at the pace of our own bodies and there's no judgment there. That's amazing. And you're creating spaces like that for people. And I just think it's so powerful, Jessie.
Thank you. And I love what you said about like having authority on your body, because truly, like, you are the expert of your own body. Like, if you think about it, like, no one really knows what's going on internally but you. Like, doctors can make medical suggestions and decisions based on what they see or what they're hearing from you, but you yourself have, you know, taking that ownership, taking that authority over your body is so beautiful for yourself, but also just an amazing healing experience to really tap in and say, what does my body need, or what is it, what feels good, what doesn't feel good.
Right. Well, and I totally believe, because I've experienced this myself, I've seen this in other people, is that this has ripple effects into all other areas of our lives. You know, if I'm the authority of my body, I'm going to talk differently to my doctor. You know, if I'm the authority of my body, I'm going to, like, I literally just before we got on the call, I emailed this, you know, there's all these retreats that people offer. And there's one that my friend was like, hey, we should go to this someday. And I looked at the marketing video and it was all thin white bodies. And I was like, that doesn't appeal. So I wrote to the organizers and I said, hey, could you please describe for me how you are doing racial inclusivity and size inclusivity in detail, so I know that this was truly a safe space for all bodies. Thank you. Write me back. I'm very curious to see what they do. But that's the thing. Like, I would never do that before. But if I'm the authority of my own body and I get to privilege my body's comfort and my body's safety and my body's ability to do what it wants, like, that also holds other people to account. And I have the confidence to do that now because of everything that we were just talking about. So your work is rippling out for other people too in that way. They're probably showing up. I imagine you get this all the time. People are like, well, I did this differently because I felt confident in myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I literally complimented one of our members the other day. I was like, your form. Like, I'm seeing the progression in this, your form. Like, you're just more confident in how you're standing and how your body looks in Pilates. Like, you just feel more confident. You're not, you know, you're bolder in your movements. And she was like, that's the nice thing someone said. I feel like butterflies would come out of my, and it was like, that is the sweetest thing. But it was, you know, there's so many like little things that we start to notice that when we get more confident in ourselves and say like, oh, you can see, I can see confidence in someone, right? You can see when it happens. It's beautiful. And that's like probably my greatest joy, is to see the transitions that happen. Because again, my story is not an anomaly. And this is why we're coming into community, to heal ourselves and to feel joy in spaces that feel good.
Yeah, absolutely. So as you created this business post-pandy, what have you found to be the biggest challenges? I'm always curious. I don't think we hear enough, you know, just kind of in general, unless you go look for it, about badass women business owners. And I think... I think we also need to normalize that. Like, you are running a business. It is successful, and you are fat, and you are Latina, and you have ADHD, and, right? Like, all of that gets to, and you're a mom, right? Like, everything, all of that gets to be true. And I love when we get to spotlight that level of diversity and intersectionality, because that's not the picture we have of like entrepreneurs, you know, it's very dude bro, white tech guys. Yeah. So what do you love about it? What are the challenges? What's it like running a successful business?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I will say that just you saying that, I received that. So thank you. Because again, it's very hard for us also to receive comments like, oh, now that really this year, I'm a lot saying like, thank you. I received that. You know, that's a new thing for me is not deflecting.
Yes. I love that. Yes, yes, yes. Receive.
Receive, right? Yes. I'll take all the blessings. We're still fairly new, Power Plus Wellness. You know, like I said, we started up right in 2021. And actually, the first 2 years, we were not making any money. We were just breaking even, you know, barely just making it. But for me, it was a side hustle and a way of like, I just want to work out with other fat people. That was literally my goal. And I was like, I got to take the class for free. And that was fun, you know. And but it was a lot of work because, you know, in the beginning, trying to find instructors, trying to find spaces that were body inclusive. Because again, the same way as you, I look at all these marketing, I look at their Instagram, and I don't see any bigger bodies. And so we really have to scout places to feel good. And a lot of it came from recommendations of our plus size members that had recommendations from teachers that felt good, that were in safe spaces. And so that's how we started to really grow. We were the ones seeking out spaces. I will say now it's really nice because spaces are seeking us and a lot of small businesses. And I think what we value a lot is like we work with a lot of small business, small fitness spaces, wellness studios, and a lot of them BIPOC owned, queer owned, women owned. And again, it's for us, it's the same. It's that same like intersectionality, right? Making sure that we're all working together. We're all small businesses, like working to make movement more inclusive. What I love about Power Plus One, it's like we're multi-boroughed. We're not, you know, we are supporting spaces in Brooklyn. We have classes in Manhattan, in the Bronx, in Queens. For us, for all the fun New York folks, but basically different, not in just in one space. I realized like, you know, when I was in New York, I was like, where is that? You know, for us, we're not just in one location. We are working with so many different people, and that's the beauty of it. But I will say growth is we are growing in a way that we can't even meet the demand, and it's good and bad, right? It's good in a way that as a business, wow, our classes are selling out almost instantly within an hour of us launching the emails. But it's also showing me that, man, there are so many people that want to move in safe spaces, and we can't even create enough classes fast enough. And that the advocacy and, you know, the advocate in me is like, we need more. Like, there are people who can't get in and I want them all to move. So we're just growing in such a rapid pace that we are really trying to meet the demand. You know, and this became what was one of my side hustles to now a full-fledged business. That I'm grateful to even be, you know, an instructor in and teaching in, but also be someone who is creating this amazing community that I did not see in my trajectory of my life, but in a way that's so beautiful. And I could have manifested something more beautiful than this. You know, I couldn't even, I didn't even think this would be possible. So, yeah, I'm just so grateful, but it's, the growth is extremely, it's good. It's good stress, but it's, trying to catch up and having limited resources, you know, to do that. So,
yeah, it reminds me about, yeah, whenever people say like, oh, I think I hear this all the time, and I've talked to a lot of guests about this too, this idea of, you know, all the money being left on the table by clothing manufacturers, by physical spaces, like not designing for plus size bodies and a little more inclusive of all different bodies. There are lots of plus size people, fat people who want to move their bodies. And there are very few spaces, especially in like a studio or a gym type setting where we feel comfortable to do so. And then, yeah. Oh, it's so frustrating. I really feel the tension of that. The yay and the, oh my God, how do we even just do this more?
It's like, we need more people. We need more resources. It's so crazy. And studios are reaching out to us and we're so happy, but it's like, yeah, we're a team of three with, you know, ambassadors that are helping us work with classes, but we really are a small team that is working to do a mighty job. A movement in a way that is really creating safe spaces for plus size bodies to move. And we're just so happy. We're so happy. It's good stress, and I'll take it all.
I want to ask, but you also don't have to answer if there's like reasons you can't. But I'm so curious if you've like, are you looking to incorporate and go for funding and get some like, are you looking to grow in that way?
We are an LLC and we actually won our first grant with Eventbrite in October for one of our events called Free Your Mind, which is actually an amazing event facilitated by myself and Amanda. But it is, you know, we have all these movement classes, and then we were thinking we need, so power plus wellness is really a key, it's a play on like power and wellness, but plus meaning like also plus, right? Plus size. So we had the power, right? We had the movement and the power, but we were like, we need some more wellness, like more things that just like really involve movement of the mind. And also like thinking about how can we shift some of the ideas of movement and what that does and how that relates to our bodies. And also we were thinking of, there are people who have been signed up to come to a class, who are on our email list, but are afraid to come or cancel last minute. And we're like, you know, maybe they just get a space to talk first and like know that it's a safe space to come. And so we actually started these series called Free Your Mind series, and it was part discussion and panels and really getting to the grits of like, what does being in this body mean to you? And what we realized is that people just wanted a space to talk. Sometimes they're the only fat person in their job. They're the only fat person in their family and in their friend group. And it was just having that space to say like, oh my God, I've been holding these feelings. But then there's like, this thing, and like, it just feels so good to talk about some of this stuff in the same space. And we're able to dance and stretch and jiggle it out after and like release some of those emotions, which was so great. But we were actually awarded a grant for our next event for Free Your Mind, and we did an even bigger version of that, which was so beautiful. I just had a beautiful day of like panels and discussions and movement classes. We had like belly dance and jiggle and meditation. We had arts and crafts. We had lunch. It was so fun. It was so fun. And so that was our first piece. We're also, I'm going to put this into the universe, but we've also applied, are in the second round of the David Prize, which is a huge New York City grant that we're, you know, we're in the running for. So I'm going to put everyone out there, put some good vibes, good prayers, good to do all the things out for us. But we are looking, we are definitely looking for funding and ways to just really be able to expand our team and pay our team to do all the work that we're doing, really just to support each other and be a fat community.
Oh my gosh, I'm sending so much energy towards that grant right in this moment. Everyone, send it. Do you worry about, right? Receive. do you worry about anti-fat bias in any of these like ways that you're inviting others in to support you who are probably not members of the fat community?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. All the instructors that we hire in when we rent studio space are plus size instructors. But for the most part, a lot of studio owners are, you know, look like typical fitness studio owners. And so we actually, you know, we have guidelines for our instructors. We talk about being health aligned. We have feedback conversations. Actually, one of our first Pilates classes, there was a move where I know that if they said, if you move, you know, if you widen your legs, you can actually go lower, right? Because a lot of us, our bellies get in the way of going a little bit deeper into a stretch. But if we modify, right, open our legs a little more, save room for our bodies, we can do that. So I noticed that he didn't mention that. And again, not in a bigger body. And so, but knowing as an instructor, because I have this insight, right, spoke to him after the class, so receiving of just like, thank you. Like, if there are any other types of modifications. And, you know, I sent him some videos. And it actually led to the studio itself, like, would love to chat to you about like this kind of stuff. And what does that look like to work with plus size bodies? And so we're actually, that's one of our longest standing partnerships. We have classes with them, you know, twice a month now. But they've been great in receiving that feedback. And so it's just great. I think, again, we're able to work with studios that really get it and are like, we want to serve everyone and we want to be inclusive of our language and inclusive of like our equipment, everything. You know, what does that look like? It is truly beautiful. And so, yeah, all of our instructors, we make sure that they are high aligned too, that they're using trauma-informed language, that they're using, that they're not using diet culture language, that they're coming from a lens of movement, is all things, but we're not talking about it for the shrinking or, you know, adding to the body.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love that. That's how, I mean, again, that's how you create the container of a safest possible space, right? Is making sure that all of those aspects are taken care of. Oh, and I'm so happy to hear, Jesse, that studios are wanting to do this. It's not like, ooh, gross, like, you know, Lululemon douchebag dude who's like, fat people shouldn't wear my product. It's like, hey, join us. We want to know, how can we do better? And I'm so, so happy. That makes my fat heart so happy.
Yeah. And it's like, I said, we're growing so much that even now instructors are reaching out to us, studio spaces are reaching out to us. And we have some of the best, I think, the best relationships that we have are the studios who reached out to us first.
Yeah.
Because they're just like, there was this eagerness already. And two of our studios are plus size women owned, which is like so cool. You know, a space in New York, I wanted to shout them out to Pilates Come In. But she is, her and her partner are both like, you know, fat queer Latinas. And when I saw her, I almost like wanted to cry because I was like, I never saw someone else like me. Because they didn't be like me. I was like, what do you think? Short girl. I'm like, we're both these, like, short little chubby girls. And like, when she was teaching, I was getting so emotional because I could see her. I see her in me. Like, I was like, that's me teaching. Or like, you know, and that was so beautiful. And we had a little like love fest after. And I was like, I just adore you. I want, like, let's be friends. Let's continue this partnership. And again, we've been working with them for over a year. But it's just beautiful to see when you can see representation. So we hope more studios are being opened by other fat, you know, and body inclusive instructors. And if you are that space, we are, you know, let us know if you're in New York. You know, we're also looking to expand in other spaces. But I think right now our focus is building this in the next couple of months. But we are traveling in the later half of the year, hopefully to start some chapters in other cities, which will be really cool.
That's so exciting, Jesse. Oh my gosh. Oh, I'm so inspired by what you're creating and also how you're doing it through partnerships. It's not like you were like, we're just going to like buy a gym, or, you know, like, you actually are doing it through partnerships and relationship, and it feels very aligned with like feminist business practices in that way to me.
Thank you. Yeah. So for me, I think it's twofold. One, we're like, we're supporting ourselves, but we're also pouring into small businesses that, in a way that I think is beautiful, right? These are spaces that, again, are not chains. We don't go to any chains. To us, our goal is to, again, in the chainy, this doesn't feel like the vibe for us even, but our goal really for, and also we see time and time again that when we're working with smaller studios, there's just more personal touches. There's more feedback that's able to be given. There's more inclusivity. There's more collaboration. And that's, I think, what's beautiful about these opportunities and how we're working with people. But at the same time, yeah, you know, we rent studio spaces ourselves. We also rent spaces and hire teachers in. I'm not saying in the future that we would love to just have a little studio to like be able to not have to rent so much from other spaces, but we're still going to be traveling and doing all these things because accessibility is a thing too, right? For New York, we're not a driving city as much. So a lot of it is walking in trains. And if you're in a bigger body and you're just starting movement out, it might be intimidating to go a 45-minute train ride to a class. And so that's why we're working with so many students in different places because we want to be able to be accessible in that way too. And that's, I think, a big thing, you know? So we're like a traveling movement group. But I love it. You know, you're just experience so many different things. You know, our girls are flipping upside down in aerial yoga and dancing Zumba in the water. We're going to have our first ever sound bath in a pool, like a yoga. We're doing like an aqua yoga and sound bath this February. And I feel like that's going to also change the game.
You're making me want to move to New York.
Listen, you just come visit us one weekend and we have classes almost every day now. So you know, just come on, girl. But we're just being able to create experiences for people to say, this felt so good and it felt so at peace with my body. And yeah.
So lovely. Oh, Jesse. Oh my gosh. You all are amazing. All of you doing this hard work, all of you creating spaces for all bodies. It's just, yeah, it's I'm just so moved by it. I think it's so important. And the way that you're doing it feels so in integrity with liberatory practices and community practices. And thank you. Thank you for doing it.
Thank you.
I have one more question before we close, which is about joy. So how do you view joy? Like, do you view it as a practice? Do you view it as it just shows up? What's your relationship like to joy?
I definitely tap into joy. For me, I know that sometimes I can get into my own head. I'm definitely in a ruminating thought, intrusive thought kind of girly in my own head. And so a lot of that can just, you know, outwardly I can be, everything is amazing. And inside my head, like there is a full blown, like just war happening in there. Like we are fighting ourselves in there. But you know, for me, I think there's a couple things that make me feel joy. Obviously one is movement. Sometimes I don't want to teach at all. Like I'm driving to the student. I'm like, I want to cancel. And as soon as I start dancing the first song, I'm like, this feels great. Why was I even, you know, it's my daughter cooking. Food brings me so much joy. And I think that's so interesting to, I hate that I have to say it sounds, you know, it's interesting to say the fat person or like, you know, but it's true. Like, right. We're so scared to say it as a fat person. Like, I love food, but I do. Like, I love cooking for people. I love when people cook for me. I think, you know, it's a labor of love. In many ways, like you're wanting to nourish someone. There's conversations that happen at a dinner table. There's just so much things that happen around food that is positive. And I think that's to the beauty of it because that's a whole other conversation, but you know, we have a lot of fat people have a lot of negative thoughts towards food. And so being able to say food is my love language in a way that feels safe, I think is also very joyful. You know, I'm also a sucker for drag TV, like drag queens and all things like RuPaul's Drag Race. And like that instantly puts me in a good mood when I'm feeling it. But again, I always find ways to like tap in. And I notice when I'm like feeling a little funky, I'm like, okay, I need to tap into one of these things that make me feel joy. So that's that listening to your body that we talked about this whole podcast, really just tuning in and saying like, oh, we're feeling a little funky, like we need to tap in somewhere. And so, yeah, definitely is listening to my body when she needs joy and creating that joy for her.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I love that. Joy is an intentional practice, really.
Mm-hmm. It is. Yeah, it is not always there.
No, no. But what I love about this, and one of the things I think why I called this Fat Joy, is that I kept thinking about how full of rage I was, but how I still wanted to make room for joy. And like this question of, can I do it intentionally? Is it something that, like, how can I make space for it? And I think that's what I've learned, very similar to you, is that, oh yeah, when I am feeling that way, I can do something that I know is likely to bring me joy, or I can make space for joy to show up. And so there's a bit of, again, this idea of self-agency, of knowing what our body needs and creating space for it to show up is pretty, again, it's revolutionary for people who have been taught their whole lives to ignore and disconnect from their bodies, like so many of us have. So yeah. Yeah, thank you for sharing all your wisdom and your joy with us, Jessie. This has been so delightful.
Oh, the pleasure was mine. It was such a fun conversation. Like, we laughed, we cried, like all the
right?
things.
I love it. I love it. Thank you. Before we go, I'd like to read a poem, because poetry can reach our hearts in a different way. Poems can have us feel in a different way. And that's what this podcast is all about. Expanding our hearts, deepening our empathy, and inviting in joy. So each week, you get a new poem. The raw momentum of this poem made me want to read it for Jessie's episode. What Jessie and her team have created is filled with desire and survival and craving, which are all words taken from this poem called Lion by Tina Chang. And here it is. I chewed into the wreck of the world, into the neck bone of the past that pursued me. All the while, I moved towards extinction, bearing the burden of damage, language of the protector. A great apocalyptic wheeze adorned me with sand. I foraged, first to find light dappling the leaves, then breathed into an infinite power, feminine rust, a coppery taste of salvage, leading me into a canopy of the future. My mother was a mother of mothers, modern before she was ancestral. She was a woman who morphed into feline, back to her human self before I woke each morning. I lived not to sate my appetite, but to crush it. On my haunches, I craved what could not be seen. I am desire. I am survival. I sit under the tree, waiting for hunger.
Thank you for joining me today. My hope is that you're feeling a little less alone and a little more seen. So until the next episode, you can find me on Instagram at fatjoy.life, on YouTube at youtube.com/@fatjoy, and on Substack at fatjoy.substack.com. And please do check out the episode notes for how you can connect with my amazing guest and for the links to the poem. All right, lovely, I am sending you off with my best wishes for an abundantly Fat Joy day, and we'll talk again soon.